We all deserve some yay in our day. So say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that add wonder to your routine, like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. It's called Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, works brilliantly, and it's fun. So it's pretty much magic. And for the adults, Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste, which is just as good without the unicorns. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Professor Lloyd Clark, his new book, The Commanders, The Leadership Journeys of George Patton, Bernard Montgomery, and Erwin Rommel. Three men who are about to meet on the battlefield as commanders in the catastrophe known as the Second World War. The professor is director of research at the Center for Army Leadership at the Royal Military Academy at Sandhurst. And the theme of this book is leadership. How did they prepare themselves? How did they conduct themselves as leaders in, to say it's a life and death struggle, it's the planet that's at risk here. We go to war with George Patton by going to exercises. Professor, the U.S. again does not enter into the war for some time. The attack by the Nazis in September of 39, and Britain and France are all in, full in the war. So is Russia, except for it's not an adversary of Berlin yet. It's just bullying the Poles and mistreating people in the East. However, George Patton knows there's a war coming, and so does the command of the U.S. Army. George Marshall will emerge as the commander of the Army. There are exercises in Louisiana, Tennessee, and the Carolinas in 1940 and 41. At this point, did the Army know the tank was going to be a major factor? Had they accepted it, Professor?
I think that this was the period during which all of the new ideas about armored warfare were coming to a head. And had these exercises been a complete failure, we may have looked at a different US relationship with armored forces. But as it is, partly because of the influence of Patton and his peers, they are a great success. They just show what bold leadership and new technology, when combined, can achieve.
And the exercises, Patton cries out for discipline. He wants smart soldiers. He wants soldiers to take initiative. He also lectures, although I don't get the sense that he's an academic like Montgomery, or he's an inspirational talker like the quiet and reserved but explosive Rommel. How is he described by his, not just his peers, but by his subordinates, as a man who presents facts?
I think that there was not a lot of trust between Patton's audiences and him as a speaker. Patton used to take various subjects about which the audience might know very little, a Roman general, for example, and go into very great detail about the command and leadership qualities of that individual. And quite frankly, he would bore everyone. Rommel and Bernard Montgomery, in contrast, would very much play to their audience. They would pick their subjects carefully, make a connection, and inspire them through their carefully chosen subjects. Patton never really did that. He spoke about what he wanted to speak about.
Yes, you have one lecture entitled Great Leaders in History. There is that concern, it shows up once or twice in your book, of Patton telling people, I presume when he's fox hunting and drinking afterwards, that he's lived many lives. And he's fought with Caesar and he's fought with Alexander. What did his peers make of that? Him being imaginative, poetic, it's suggestively dysfunctional.
Yes, I would agree. I think that around the dining room table at a dinner party, friends and family might say, well, that's just Patton being Patton. Georgie's always like that. But when he expresses the idea that he is the reincarnation of Napoleon Bonaparte, and he says that in the officers' mess or to a group of grizzled veterans and junior soldiers, they can't find any connection with this man at all. And particularly when he says it's his destiny to die on a battlefield, well, they say, well, please go ahead and do that, but don't include us.
Yes, there are other things about Patton. I've mentioned his drinking. He's also a vulgar speaker in polite company. It's odd. It's all very strange. But we go to Montgomery, who's nothing but a gentleman at all times, although an unpopular gentleman, and he doesn't care. He has protectors, however. And I'm struck by this because after the defeated Dunkirk, well, let's do the defeated Dunkirk first, because at this point, he becomes the centerpiece of saving the British Expeditionary Force and what they can of the French Army and the Belgian Army. He commands the 3rd Infantry Division, and he's trained them for the fight during what was called the Setzkrieg, where everybody sat down after the attack on Poland, and there wasn't anything else until mid-May of 1940. And he trains his division endlessly. Did they appreciate why he was doing this?
I think at first they didn't. We've got to remember that Montgomery becomes the commander of the 3rd Division, the principal British fighting division, only just before the outbreak of hostilities. And they had very little time to get to know their general officer. So by the time, just a couple of months later, they're sitting in France, waiting for the Germans to attack, they're wondering why this character, this quite aloof, fairly cold character, is making them work so hard when they think they've already got all of the answers. They know all of the tactics. And so they reacted initially quite badly, but eventually they got it because he formed a team through that hard work, through those exercises, through that training.
10 May, the Germans attack overwhelmingly. And the 3rd Division is part of the line to protect Brussels, but then it falls back, a very difficult maneuver to withdraw in contact with the enemy. And the fallback sees its flanks disappear. While the 3rd Division performs well, the flanks do not. And it turns out that Montgomery is charged, sort of drafted, to be the last of the divisions to exit from the beach. I have the note here that he left on June 1st, and I had a sense that he left reluctantly because there were still details for him to clean up. He's back in Britain now with the army in disarray totally. What was his thinking at this point? Was it, we're going to reorganize and go back and get him, or was he discouraged?
Montgomery wasn't disheartened at all. He saw the disheveled British army back behind its fortress defences in the UK as a challenge. He wanted to rebuild the British army, not just so that it could continue the war, but so it could get into the front foot, be offensively minded, attack, and to win the war. So he saw most of these problems purely within his remit, a challenge, a puzzle to be solved.
And he now is in charge of the Southeastern Army. The expectation was the invasion was from Germany was coming that summer. It didn't come. But the Southeastern Army would have taken the brunt if there had been Operation Sea Lion and an invasion of the British Isles. The 7th Panzer Division is given to Erwin Rommel by the Prussians. And the idea here is we're going to attack them on May 10th. Remember, Montgomery's on the other side of the battlefield. We're crossing now to the German side. And the 7th Panzer Division is the first time, to my knowledge, that Rommel's commanded panzers. Is that correct? He'd been an infantryman to this point.
That's right. He takes up the command of the 7th Panzer Division in February 1940. And he's been an infantry commander up to that point in his career. And now he's a major general commanding a panzer division to just about to launch an invasion of Belgium and France. But it's going to be one of the most remarkable in military history. And he does extremely well through that.
Yes, he's aggressive, as you would expect. But at this point, he's also, for the first time that I was aware, disobedient. Or let's put it this way, I didn't hear that order. I'm attacking. He sees himself as the spear tip of the invading force. And yet that worries his commanders because it exposes their flanks. The Germans were nowhere near confident that we believe they are in retrospect at this point, because the BEF and the French army and the conditions on the battlefield were to be solved in action. The The defenses of France were said to be adequate, and therefore this route through the Ardennes was a surprise to everyone. The roads, everything could have gone wrong. But Rommel is successful to the point that at the end, and Paris falls on the 14th of June, he's one of the celebrated ones. Now, the Nazi propaganda machine is taking up Rommel at this point, or was that already in place? Is this when they start to celebrate him in the newsreels?
This is when they begin to celebrate him. He becomes Hitler's general. He becomes known as the commander of the Phantom Division, the man that is the personification of the German success, the man that takes risks, creates a psychological impact over the enemy, and does remarkable things. And it's everything that Hitler could want of a general at this time.
And the celebration now includes Rommel being tasked to go to Libya, where the Italian forces allied with the Germans have been successful so far, but they are now being pressed by the British army pushing back. So next we're going to, with Rommel, the Panzer Commander Rommel, to Libya in March of 41. Professor Lloyd Clark, the book is The Commanders, The Leadership Journeys of George Patton, Bernard Montgomery, and Erwin Rommel. All three men are about to meet in the battlefield of North Africa over the next 2 years. I'm John Batchelor.
What if every student had a tutor and personalized learning was available to everyone? What if every family had a financial guide and their investments made for an optimistic future? What if every doctor could diagnose you in seconds and healthcare visits felt more personal? What if your business never slept and every customer's shopping experience felt like it was designed especially for them? It can with Agentforce, the powerful AI from Salesforce.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.